Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Great philosophers imagine that the complete planetary systems in the universe are displays of the different upper and lower limbs of the universal body of the Lord. Here's the purport. The word kalpayanti, or imagine, is significant. The virat, universal form of the absolute, is an imagination of the speculative philosophers who are unable to adjust to the eternal two-handed form of Lord Sri Krishna. Although the universal form is as imagined by the great philosophers is one of the features of the Lord, it is more or less imaginary. It is said that the seven upper planetary systems are situated above the waist of the universal form, whereas the lower planetary systems are situated below his waist. The idea impressed herein is that the Supreme Lord is conscious of every part of his body, and nowhere in the creation is there anything beyond his control. Yasye havayavar lokan kalpayanti manishina kachadibihadah sapta saptordvang jaganadibihi. Great philosophers imagine that the complete planetary systems in the universe are displays of the different upper and lower limbs of the universal body of the Lord. Om Ajnanata Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarupyascham Kripa Sindhu Bhaebacham Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So my gratitude for being given the opportunity to speak. I try my best and I request your good wishes, blessings, that I can say something appropriate on a topic which I find very confusing, the universal form. It's quite almost an enigmatic topic. It's kind of like, it's material, but it's not material. It's a form of the Lord, so it's spiritual. And it's hard to understand when the categories are kind of merged together almost. Which reminds me, there is one, in one purport, Prabhupada explains that there's one incarnation of the Lord that has a material body. Does anyone know which incarnation that is? Well, I'm thinking of one of the actual avatars. Virat Rupa, is it an incarnation of the Lord or not? That's a good question. Parashuram, does he? I'm not sure. Kamadev, which is, you know, of course, because he's Cupid, maybe that's why he's got material body. Pajumna, I think, right? But it's definitely Vishnu Tattva and material body. It's in one of the purports. I think maybe in the fifth canto. Anyway, these are some of the curiosities. You think you know the philosophy and then you find a purport that thinks, oh, that's new. I never thought that could be the case. How could the Supreme Personality of Godhead have a material body? My guess is because he's Kamadev, which is Cupid personified, and his particular function is attraction, then he can have a material body in order to somehow connect to that. That's my guess, but I'm not. It's only a guess. So Prabhupada often explains that the universal form is imaginary. Now, we like to make everything shastric. So where does it say in Shastra that the universal form is imaginary? Well, we have the word in this verse, kalpayanti. Kalpayanti means imagine. So there we have it. Srimad Bhagavatam, Pramana Mamalam. It is the ultimate authority for us Vaishnavas. And here we see that the universal form is kalpayanti. And the universal form, it conjures up a lot of thoughts. It conjures up the idea of awe, greatness, fear. You know, in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Kalo Smi Lokakshaya Krit Pravida, Krishna says to Arjuna, I am time, or time I am, and the great destroyer of the worlds. So when I consider the universal form, I think of things like war. There's a war going on in Europe. For me, that reminds me of the universal form. It's something that it cannot be avoided. Prabhupada said, for non-devotees, Krishna is experienced as death. And for devotees, death is experienced as Krishna. Yeah. When you see universal destruction, Kshaya Krit Pravrida, is how Krishna describes it. He is the great destroyer. That is Krishna. So whatever plans we have, we don't know what's going to happen next. We could be having so many plans about how our life's going to turn out. And before you know it, we're in a trench with a gun and we're trying to kill someone who's trying to kill us. And who imagined that would happen? That's Kalo Smi. I am time. Krishna's time, the time factor. That is one aspect of the universal form. There's so many aspects. There is, like Prabhupada explains in the beginning, first chapter. I think it's the first chapter. What's the name of the first chapter? First step in God realization, yes, which is the universal form. The first step in God realization. He explains that the material scientists, they, because they're not qualified to meditate on the two-armed form of the Lord, the actual avatars, they become obsessed with the universal form. So whoever thought of that, that when cosmologists, you know, scientists, whoever considered that that is actually the universal form of the Lord? That's one aspect. So it's a difficult topic to understand. On the one hand, it's time, it's destruction. On the other hand, it's what the modern-day scientists are preoccupied with. Now, there's another aspect to this in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna tells Arjuna that the universal form is Adi Daivata. What does that mean? Anyone know what Adi Daivata would mean? The material manifestation is Adi Bhuta. The universal form is Adi Daivata. And Krishna tells Arjuna, I am Adi Yajna, which is the super soul. Back to Dave. Threefold miseries. Okay. Adi Bhuta, Adi Daiva. Yeah, the kleshas are Adi Bhuta from living entities, Adi Daiva from superior beings, demigods. And then Adi Bhautika is the from our own mind and senses as well. Adi Yajna. Was it? Adi Daivata? Adi Atmaka. Sorry, Adi Atmaka is our mind and senses, yes. Well, actually, you're right there, because in this klesh, the klesh you're referring to, Adi Daivata, is referring to the miseries caused by the demigods, like when it rains. It's not that much of a misery, but earthquakes, for example. So yes, that's the answer. When Krishna tells Arjuna about the universal form, he explains, he doesn't compare it just to the material manifestation. It includes the demigods. So that's another aspect, you see. Sometimes we hear that, Prabhupada explains that the universal form is for the pantheists. A pantheist is someone who worships the universe. Their highest conception is the universe. And they see, what is God? You know, God's not a person, but God is just everything all at once. It's inconceivable, and it kind of inspires people. That's pantheism. But there's more, because the demigods, some people, you know, they're kind of into the environment, and they kind of have a pantheistic kind of conception. They want to save the planet, and I totally agree with it. I personally think, everyone's got their own opinion, I personally think that Extinction Rebellion are quite good what they do, actually. I like what they do, because I know they're breaking the law, and I mean, but it's for such a good cause that I think it's justified, because saving the planet's a lot more important than maybe holding up the traffic for a few hours or something. It's just not that big a deal. I think saving the planet is more important. But anyway, not everyone thinks that way. But this is pantheism, when you have a higher conception of just lining your pockets and driving around in cars and polluting the environment. You've got a bigger conception. But beyond this, but this pantheism, there's no conception of demigods there for these people, unless they're coming from a Vedic heritage point of view, which I don't think they are. But so notice how Krishna, when he explains the universal manifestation, that's Adi Bhuta, but then the demigods, that's called Purusha. He uses the word Purusha, which is Adi Daivata. This is in the 8th chapter. So the point I'm making here is to get a fuller conception of the universal form. It's not just about everything. It's not about the universe. It's about the universe and the demigods, and how the demigods fit into the different category parts of the universal form. And then we have in the next chapter, which is Purushukta confirmed, the universal form is described from another angle of vision, about, like, for example, food, delicious food that comes from the tongue of the universal form. The trees, they're coming from the hair of the universal form. So it's looking at how different things we see around us are all connected to the universal form. So therefore it's imaginary, because we don't actually think that. We don't actually think that there is this form with hairs and the trees are the hairs. But it's helpful for meditation, you see? So that's another aspect of the universal form, how it's the generating source of the food, of power of voice. The mouth of the universal form is a generating source of voice. Right, that's another aspect. Now, in the fifth canto, there's a completely different aspect of the universal form. It's described as the dolphin constellation, Shishumara. So apparently, people who are adept at meditating on the universal form, they conceive of the universe in this dolphin constellation. And that's quite amazing. If you Google it, you'll find a nice picture of someone meditating and you see the dolphin constellation. Google's great. Google's got everything, you know. So that's another aspect of the universal form. There's more. There's destruction, there's a dolphin. I was thinking there was another one, actually. It's just, there's so many angles you can take when you come to look at the universal form that it just becomes bewildering, and it's hard to actually give an definition of what the universal form is. But anyway, the point is, there is an imaginary feature of that, and there, which contrasts with the Vishnu Tattva avatars, which are eternal, you see. So we may meditate on the universal form, and it's interesting how in this particular verse, Prabhupada translates Manishinaha as great philosophers. So we shouldn't be arrogant. We have this tendency, because we worship Shama Sundar, we look down on everyone else. But we shouldn't be arrogant, because our consciousness might not even be as elevated as someone who's meditating on the universal form. Because what do you meditate? I mean, I don't meditate on the universal form. I think that's kind of a very expansive type of meditation that I'm not capable of doing. I have a theoretical understanding to meditate on Krishna, but I'm not actually practically doing it every day, not all the time. I try and do it. But what do I think about? I think of little things in my life, daily things which are very petty, very temporary, and that's what absorbs me. So I should be respectful to those who are able to meditate properly on the universal form, because they manage to elevate themselves above a platform that I'm still stuck on. But at the same time, I have my goal of Krishna in mind. Therefore, I accept that the path that I follow is the highest. But that doesn't mean I'm that far ahead on that path, you see. That's how we can balance these two conceptions. Otherwise, we get arrogant, and it's detrimental to our spiritual life. So let us go down. We can talk about Krishna, worship of Krishna. And as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, this is our main object of worship. Our Ishta Devata, for most people, maybe Krishna. Then there's various other avatars. It's all categorizes back to yoga. Worship all the avatars. This is what Rupa Goswami explains when he describes Anya Bilashita Sunyam Gyana Karma Dinavitam Anokoina Krishna Anu Sevanam Bhakti Rutama. Topmost devotional service is worship of Krishna without any other motive, right? And what is Krishna Anu Shilanam? What does it mean? It means Krishna and all the avatars, you see. So you can worship Lord Ram, and then you're still following Rupa Goswami, because he says Krishna means, well, I think it's Jiva Goswami or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I forget which commentary. They explain that Krishna Anushilanam means worship of all the different avatars. But then in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes certain pious people who are also worshipping Krishna, but they have other motives. They're not Anya Bilashita Shunya. They have other motives. It's Chaturvida Bhajantimam Jana Sukriti Nojina Arto Jigyasur Artate Gyani Cha Bharatarshaba. So these four types of people approach. One is Arta, means those who are distressed. Jigyasu, those who are curious. Artate, desirers of wealth. And Gyani, those who are in knowledge. And then he explains Desham Gyani Nitya Yukta Eka Bhakti Vashishtati. Gyani no, was it? Aham Sacha Mama Priya. Gyani no Ivachart Tartam. The Gyani is the highest. Priyoham. Is it Priyoham? Anyway, of all the types of worship, all the types of person that worship Krishna, Krishna says, the jnani is the highest. He is very, very dear to me. You see? So then where do the people who worship the universal form fit in here? Are they above, below, the same level as those that approach Krishna with a motive? Where do they fit in? Anyone know? Prayojana Prabhu.
What I do know is that Bhagavatam has been brought to everyone. That actually, it's also explaining there are different approaches to Krishna. Mm-hmm. And so what we consider that Bhagavatam is trying to reach everyone according to their level, that there are other aspects that we should consider. I think that's the depth of this particular one, imaginary, that is also expressed in other forms that you mentioned mm-hmm. too. But there's the other one that occurs to me is Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. Mm-hmm. They were given an impression of the universal form. And both, one didn't make an impression on, for instance, Duryodhana, because he thought it was one of the tricks. And he was trying to degrade Krishna in that way. And Dhritarashtra, he was shown it because though Prabhupada says he's not only physically blind, but he's spiritually blind as well. But somehow they wanted to communicate a universal form for his position. You know, both were inimical to the situation of Krishna and what they desired. Mm. And so it's what their desire that they interpreted as it's a trick, or the other one, he wanted the kingdom for his family. Mm. So it was like a self-motivated impression that they would get and interpret it that way.
Yes.
So it didn't affect their position. Yeah.
It's interesting that we have demoniac people seeing the universal form, and then we have devotees like Arjuna and Yashoda. Yashoda saw the universal form. When Krishna was eating dirt, he opened his mouth and she saw the universal form. So for advanced devotees, Arjuna is always with Krishna. You know that whatever Krishna enacts the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is present. So he's constantly going to different universes and he's playing the role as the servant of Krishna. And when he sees the universal form, it's yoga. It's part of his devotional service. One of the chapter called On the Universal Form, some editions of the Gita, is called Vishwarup Darshan Yoga. It's the bhakti, and it's bhakti. It's the devotional service of experiencing the universal form of Krishna. When Mother Yashoda experienced the universal form, it was astonishing. Now, astonishment is a secondary rasa. So when you're on that platform of being a pure devotee, then the universal form facilitates your rasa. It's a very tasteful experience. And then what happened? The yoga maya potency came over Mother Yashoda and she forgot the vision altogether and she became reabsorbed in her affectionate relationship with baby Krishna, you see. And same with Arjuna. What did he say? He wanted to see the Saumya Rup. Saumya Rup means beautiful form. And that's a very significant term because what it indicates is that you cannot equate the universal form and Krishna's form. Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki jai. Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanumana ki jai. Shishi Gonitai ki jai. We cannot equate the universal form as on the equal status as Krishna's beautiful two-armed form. Because Arjuna says, show me the Saumya Rup, the beautiful form. So beauty is ultimately where we're heading for. I mentioned earlier how the scientists, they are preoccupied with the universal form. Scientists, top scientists, they can appreciate the workings of nature and they can appreciate the beauty behind the creation, the mathematics behind it, and they are struck by the beauty of it. So ultimately, everyone's just seeking after beauty. People who are pursuing intellectuality, it's really because it's beautiful. That's why they do it. If you enjoy, you know, being a philosopher, it's because there's a taste in what you get. Ultimately, taste is what motivates us. Anando maya byasat. We're ultimately governed by taste, ananda, and that taste comes in different ways. So some people, I mean, I remember I started a PhD in mathematics and then I dropped out. That was about 20, 30 years ago. And there was one of the professors, he had white hair, and I heard that he actually got white hair doing his PhD. It was so traumatic, stressful for him that his hair turned white. It's kind of amazing. Sometimes when people lose a relative, their hair turns white overnight, pretty much. It can be so stressed. You get a traumatic experience, it can actually affect you physically. But anyway, I'm thinking, why did that person do that? Why did they suffer so much? This is because they were so attracted to the topic and so attracted to the desire to be learned, the desire to have a special accomplishment, right? That they're prepared to go through all kinds of pain in order to get that result, you see? So they're ultimately, it's a taste, you see? We're driven by something. Now, the worship of the universal form, we respect it because it's a step towards Krishna. Prabhupada gives the example of the person in the street drinking wine, thinking Krishna is the taste in wine. And he says that person makes spiritual advancement, you see? So there are two types of wine drinkers. There are those that drink wine and they don't connect it to Krishna, and those that drink wine and they connect it to Krishna. So those that connect it, they're on the path to Bhakti Yoga, you see? They've actually connected it to Krishna. Krishna says, Raso hum apso kauntiya, I am the taste of water. But for some people, he's the taste of wine, you see. But we don't have that analogy in the Bhagavad Gita, you see. So wherever you're at, you know, you're coming to the next stage. And that's how Krishna arranges it. Krishna's all attractive. The word Krishna means all attractive. It's like a magnet. You know, pulling. What's the word for ploughing? Krishi. Krishi and Krishna, it's the same dhatu, the same root, Sanskrit root. You draw, there's attraction, pulling and attraction, the tractor and the attractor. Krishna is the attractor, the tractor is the tractor, Krishi, pulling. So Krishna's got to find a way to pull everyone to him. But then there's this other force, the Maya force, which makes it distasteful. Yeah? It's Yat Krishna Nama Charitadi Sitapya Vidya Pitopatasya Rasanasya Narochikanu. Yeah? It is very sweet, Krishna consciousness, but due to the jaundice of ignorance, it tastes the opposite way. It's very bitter. So Krishna has to find a way. So there he is. The Vibhuti Yoga section of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, Krishna's the lion. So some people are into lions. They like sharks. Really exciting. When you're a child, the lion's really exciting. Going to visit the zoo, see all these things. That's attraction. He's presenting all that. That's going to attract you. The Vishwarup is going to attract you. But ultimately, he's bringing us towards his Shamasunda form, which is the Achintya Gunaswarupam. It's the inconceivable form, which is, it is only perceived for those people whose eyes are anointed with the salve of the love of God. Premanjana Charita, Bhakti Vilochanena, you see? So Krishna's got to do everything he can to bring us to him. Maiva mana adatsva, mai buddham naveshaya, neva shishati maiva, ata urva mashangshaya. Just fix your mind upon me and engage your intelligence on me. Thus you will come to me without fail. Yeah, that's Krishna's promise. That's all he's trying to do. And we respect all the ways that Krishna provides to give us, that gives us, he gives us these ways in order that we can become attracted to him. So that's bridge preaching. If you see the Bhagavad Gita, there's so much bridge preaching going on there, right? So many ways that Krishna's attracting us. So let's go back to the question. I asked, where does the universal form fit in compared to those who worship Krishna with the desire for wealth, with the desire for out of curiosity, out of distress? Where do they fit in? Well, let's explain. Oh, I'm going to go. No, you go for it. I'm interested to hear what you're going to say. Antaranga Prabhu is going to give us an angle on this.
Ishvan Chakravarti Thakur offers one explanation in the 11th chapter to the Bhagavad Gita that Viradrupa is a semi-stage between personalism, between impersonalism and personalism. As such, it offers like what these personalities, they can see the material cosmos, the material universe, the energies, the flow of the trees, the mountains, the clouds, and they relish that conception. And so Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that it's a semi-step between them being having impersonal conception, and the next step is the personal understanding of the
world. Thank you. That just confirms how it's a enigmatic topic. It's in a sense it's personal, and in a sense it's still not personal. It's something in between, right? It's the boundary. Makes it difficult to understand, right? Thank you. Which answers the question, because those who approach Krishna for a motive, they are personalists. They understand that Krishna is a person. Someone who worships universal form kind of isn't something in between. The answer is given in the Bhagavad Gita. There's a purport in the 9th chapter. There's a verse, Jnana yagyena chapjanye yajato mam vipassate ekat vena pratak vena bahuda vishvatomukam. Those who worship me through jnana, through knowledge, do it in different ways. Ekat vena, what does that mean? What does it mean to worship ekat vena by oneness? What does it mean? Anyone understand what that type of worship is? Worshipping yourself, yeah. It's like monism, I am God, yeah. Aham Brahmasmi. You are God too, Tatvamasi. It's interesting, Prabhupada explains what does Tatvamasi mean for a Vaishnav? We're speaking to Krishna. You, Krishna, are Brahma, you're Parabrahma, Tatvamasi. You're not just a coward boy, you're Parabrahma, Tatvamasi. Yeah, so Ekat Vena, it's of, and then Pritakt Vena. What does it mean, Pritakt Vena? Now, Ekat Vena means in oneness, Pritakt and Pritakt means in variety. What type of variety are we referring to here? What type of worship is that referring to? Yes. Yes, demigod worship is how it's explained. There's so many varieties, so many demigods, so you can worship in variety. That's Pritaktva. And of course, Krishna says, "Kamas tairs tairitagyana prabhajantena devataha." If your intelligence is stolen by illusion, then you worship the various demigods. So that's that type of worship. But notice how this is classed as worship of me. Krishna says, "Yajato mam upasati." Upasati, mam, worships me. That's still counted as worship of Krishna. So we can see the benefit in even in these things that aren't, you know, intelligence is stolen by illusion, but still worshipping. You're worshipping me indirectly, so it's beneficial. And then the last one is Vishvatomukam, which means the universal form, you see. And of those, Prabhupada explains in the purport that this type of worship, it is not on the same level as the Arto Jigyasurartati. They're higher. Those who worship Krishna, even with a motive, they are higher because they have the right conception. They know to worship Krishna, you see. Just to know that you worship Krishna, even though you may not do it nicely, just to know you worship Krishna, that means that you're on a higher platform, you see. And then we have to be careful when we talk about platforms, right, isn't it? Because, I recently was one class, someone was asking a question. I made the point, Prabhupada once said, if you distinguish between higher devotee and lower devotee, then you're a nonsense. Prabhupada said this. And this is a very important point. We should be very careful. We shouldn't see lower. No one's lower. There isn't such a thing as a lower devotee. It's like saying one incarnation is lower than the other. It's not. It's perfect. Perfect and more perfect. You see? Some people say, you know, Vishnu's lower than Krishna. No. Krishna, Siddhanta Tastva Bedipi, Shrisha Krishna Sarupayo. They're equal, but in Siddhanta, they're Vishnu. They're all Vishnu Tattva. Vishnu, all forms of Vishnu are perfect, complete, unlimitedly beautiful. So you can't say they're lower. There's no low for It sounds like you're looking down on Vishnu. It's like, how can you do such a thing? So it's the same with devotees. We do distinguish. We seek the association of advanced devotees and we serve them. You know, and we have friendships with equals and we give mercy to those that are juniors. We see that. But at the same time, we also see all devotees are dear to Krishna. And in fact, more dear to Krishna than Krishna himself. And we have to balance the two. So we don't look down. We don't look down on people, but we still distinguish. It's hard to do, but we should do that. Otherwise, it's not good for our spiritual life. We're a nonsense if we start distinguishing. We shouldn't be doing that. We should be full of happiness that Krishna has sent devotees, because what it Shuddha Bhakata Charanarenu Bhajana Anukula Bhakata Seva Paramasiddhi Premalatikara Mula. The root of the lata, the creeper of devotion, is Bhakata Seva. It's the service of the devotees. And the word Bhakta is a very high word. Panchatattvatmakam Krishna Bhakta Rupa Sarupatam Bhakta Vaktaram Bhakta Kyam. What does Bhakta Kyam mean? Namami Bhakta Shaktikam. It means Srivas Thakur. Such an elevated devotee. He's called Bhakta. So I was very honoured when I was referred to as a Bhakta today. Because we have this kind of rule. Like some people, one time someone said, we shouldn't sing Bhakta Prahlad. We should sing Prahlad Maharaj. And I'm like, I don't know. Is that true or not? Anyway, some people say that. Anyway, so Bhakta is very high. Even the miserable, so-called miserable beginner Bhaktas who are suffering with their material desires, they don't like to get up in the morning. That's like me sometimes, you know. They're still very, very beautiful. There's a bud. Like the rose, like a rose. You wouldn't say a rose bud isn't beautiful, is it? Okay, you can't see the rose, but the bud's there. So the beauty's there. It's just about to bloom. It's just a matter of time. So that's how we should see devotees. They're very beautiful, all devotees. Even devotees, they maybe don't get on with each other. There's some anartas, there's some personality clashes, there's some differences. But actually, we should see beyond that. All devotees are beautiful. They're like budding flowers, and they're about to blossom. And it happens very quickly, you know, just a few lifetimes. In eternity is a long time, so just a few lifetimes just go through the purification process, and then the devotee becomes so beautiful that Krishna's controlled by that devotee. That is ultimately the result of devotional service. Aham bhakta pradina yasvatantra iva dvija. That the Krishna tells Durvasa Muni, I'm actually controlled by the devotees, so, you know, I can't protect you. You know, you want protection because you offended Ambarish Maharaj, but I can't give you that protection because I'm controlled by them. You have to go back to them and they'll forgive you, that's fine. But if they don't forgive you, I won't forgive you, Krishna says, because he doesn't forgive. If the devotee's offended, Krishna does not forgive. So we're almost there. It's only a few lifetimes if we follow nicely the process of devotional service. And we'll have that exalted position ourselves. And in that position, we'll see ourselves as lower than a straw in the street, Hare Krishna. And to get there, we have to always chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So thank you for tolerating me, and I'll open it up for any comments or questions, if anyone has any. Prayojana Prabhu, Jai.
There was once one of the Prabhupada disciples had he pointed out really in that even the atheists worship Krishna. It seems those who are envious and mischievous, they'll never see me. And an atheist is basically on the principle of envy, so they'll never see them. They exclude themselves, and so in that way they're still all talking about Krishna. Interesting, isn't it?
It's interesting that imitation is a form of flattery, right?
Yeah.
So atheists, they try and become God. It's an indirect compliment that they actually have enough, you know. They have enough respect for God indirectly that they want to become God, you know. It's like they unknowingly are attracted to God, so they want to become God because that's what they're attracted to. And envy is another type of flattery. If you envy someone, it means you actually perceive something that they have that you don't have. So you're kind of like, it's an indirect compliment. Krishna's known as Madhudvija, right? The Madhu demon was so powerful that even Krishna envied this demon. It's funny, isn't it? Krishna's envying the demon because the demon's so wonderful. What does it mean, you know? It's interesting. Thank you. Haribo. Antaranga Prabhu. Oh. You go first. Yes. Thank you.
Oh, Prabhu, thanks. Thank you for Prabhu. Technical class. So a nice point that Prabhupada made about, it's good to hear the nonsense bit that when we distinguish higher and lower.
Mm.
And what came to mind was, and I'm sure we can always go back to this point, that we're all spirit souls. So we Satchit Anand. So that's how they see us, like the devotees, like Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. They see the living entity as this Satchit Anand. So there's therefore no distinction.
Mm.
But as you say, we, at our stage, at our level, we try to make some distinctions, to make some progress in some ways.
So
that's a significant point. So we appear ignorant or covered because of we're conditioned. But really, it's a form of illusion as well. So they actually see the real thing, Satchit Anand. It's an interesting point. That's something for me to take home.
That's exactly it. See, this discrimination is very important to make progress, but how do we see that discrimination? We're discriminating about something which ultimately has no basis, right? He said, the differences that we see, they're not real, they're temporary, and they're part of the illusory energy, workings of illusory energy, so they're not that serious. We shouldn't take them seriously. But if you make a mistake, if you take them seriously, you're actually taking the material energy too seriously, and you're not seeing the potential of the devotee, and you're looking down on the devotee because you see the material faults. Yeah. So you made the correct point that it's ultimately has no basis in reality. It's just the illusion. The difference is in level of the devotee. It's something. It's not this actual substance. Devotees are ultimately all Satchitananda, as you
can it be
pointed.
A form of offense as well? Because
if
Krishna is in that individual, a spark of that individual. Therefore, if we see him anything other than Krishna being a part of Krishna, then, and if we see Krishna in him, in that person, he or she, then how can we look down on them? We're looking down on Krishna.
Yes.
That's the highest vision, isn't it?
That's where this, from the Padma Purana, Vaishnava Jati Buddha, Buddhi, Yashivanara Kisaha, one's already considered to be a resident of hell if one judges a Vaishnava according to Jati, according to their birth. Now that's how it's described in history. But what does that mean today? It means we don't have caste system in Britain, right? Well, it's there. Foreign ashrams everywhere. We have the administrative class. We have the intellectual class. Of course it's there. But we don't have caste consciousness. We don't walk around going, I can't touch that person because they become to a different caste to me. We don't have a caste. We don't think I belong to this caste. That person belongs to that caste, right? In India, 100 years ago, very prominent. But that whole thing. The modern interpretation of that is, or the modern application is, to judge a Vaishnava according to their material qualities. And if you judge a fault, you see a fault in a Vaishnava, that's what Jati Buddhi ultimately means. It's like saying, that Vaishnava's a Shudra. I'm a Brahmana Vaishnava. There's a Shudra Vaishnava. I'm better than them. That person's in hell because they're not respecting the fact that there's a Vaishnava. Thank you. And Taranga Prabhuji.
I have a few questions, but I'm just going to narrow it to one. My question is, like, for instance, the discrimination between the darshan of the Viradrupa between Mother Yashoda and Arjuna, and also to the Kauravas. So for Arjuna, the reason why he was, like, fearful was that there was a time aspect as a darshan, the all-devouring time. And the reason why Mother Yashoda, she was perplexed, was that the time was missing. The acharyas are commenting that the darshan of time was just not there. So I was thinking, is there any significant sort of a discriminative factor in the darshan of which was given to Kauravas?
Okay, that's an interesting question. I don't know anything off the top of my head, but I would ask the following question. I mean, it's like the when Rukmini was at Swayamvara, no one saw her. Only Krishna saw her. Because no one else had the qualification to see her. So they saw an illusory form. So my question is, can the for a start, we know that the universal form seen by Arjuna was never before seen, right? So what Arjuna saw is something more than what the Kauravas saw. And my question is, because they don't have a demonic mentality, they wouldn't be qualified to see whatever universal form they saw. It wouldn't be as deep, it wouldn't be have the same depth as the universal form that Arjuna saw, because Arjuna is a devotee. So the universal form that Krishna reveals to the devotees is different from the universal form that he reveals to the demons. And Arjuna was the first to see that form. So yeah, but yeah, I don't know the particular angle. I follow your question, but I don't have an answer for that, if anyone else does. Anything particular features of the universal form that Krishna revealed to Duryodhana?
I mean, when you voice it like this, it makes sense. As Parijana Prabhu was also saying that, because Divya Chakshush was invested from Krishna, and Arjuna was like, if you consider, then give me the vision. So I guess that's the real angle, the blessing or the mercy of Krishna to allow to see the full spectrum of the universal form rather than based on enmity, which the Kaurava has been presenting. Makes sense, thank you.
And it's rasa. It stimulates rasa, the universal form. Astonishment is one of the rasas. Hare Krishna.
You said that, you just said now again that universal form can facilitate the rasa.
Yes.
What do you mean exactly?
So take the example of Mother Yashoda. So she's in Vatsalya ras. Okay? She's like motherly affection. But there's another ras, secondary ras, called Adbhuta ras, astonishment. So Krishna opens his mouth, and then she sees the universe and she becomes astonished. So she's experiencing another type of ecstasy. And then the loser energy comes over her again, and she's back with the primary rasa of Vatsalya again, you see. So that's very flavorsome. And so the universal form in here is like, it stimulates that rasa, so it helps. It creates variety and taste in the spiritual world. You know? Because as devotees, if we become perfect, we have, we can experience eight rasas, seven secondary rasas, and then we have one primary rasa, which is our main rasa. So we can, as devotees, we can experience our primary rasa, and then we can experience the other secondary rasas. So it's very dynamic, the spiritual world, it's always changing. So it facilitates. Thank you. It's an eternal variety that's ever-present, right? Because there's no time. There's a sequence. We have Ashtakali Lila, we have a sequence, but it's eternal, timeless, but it's still a sequence. No boredom. I don't know, remember one time Prabhupada said, look at one of the pictures and go, oh, Krishna's got a headache. He said that. So if you can have headaches in the spiritual world, maybe you can have boredom too. Who knows? But it's a very relishable boredom. It's ecstatic boredom. Anyway, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Aki Srila Prabhupada Aki Jai Nitya Gaur Premanandi.